A cleaver against a gun rated special notice. Good advertising for Estelle's Kitchen, but not important otherwise. Save that the kids could use that money. Help pay the mortgage, no doubt, and wound up in my pocket. But I wouldn't have heard of this minor dust-up had I not been in New Canaveral and happened to stop by Estelle's Kitchen when the real head was removed. Flies, you know. And the plastic trophy head custom required Joe to display was substituted for it by the street committee. But I was, speaking of privacy. When I picked the property for Mason Long, I made sure that it included space for a growing family. That's all, since they had three bucking and one in the chute the night we planned it. Rearranging hours gave them privacy from each other, too. Happy as it is to snuggle and make love, nevertheless, when you are really tired, it is often good to have the bed to yourself. And the new routine not only allowed this, but necessitated it, part of each day, through staggering their working hours. But I also planned room to give them privacy from their children, and to cope with another problem Yeeta did not have straight, and Joe may not have thought about. Minerva, can you define incest? The computer replied, "Incest is a legal term, not a biological one. It designates sexual union between persons forbidden by law to marry. The act itself is forbidden. Whether such union results in progeny is irrelevant. The prohibitions vary widely among cultures and are usually, but not always, based on degrees of consanguinity."
"You darn tootin', it's not always. There are cultures which permit first cousins to marry. Genetically risky, but forbid a man to marry his brother's widow, which involves no more risk than it did for the first union. When I was younger, you could find one rule in one state, then cross an invisible line and find exactly opposite laws 50 feet away. Or sometimes, in places, both unions might be mandatory. Or forbidden. Endless rules, endless definitions for incest, and rarely any logic to them. Minerva, as far as I recall, the Howard families are the first group in history to reject the legalistic approach and to define incest solely in terms of genetic hazard."
"That accords with the records in me," Minerva agreed. "A Howard geneticist might advise against a union between two persons with no known common ancestry, but place no objection to marriage of siblings. In each case, analysis of genetic charts would control."
"Yeah, sure. Now let's drop genetics and talk about taboo. The incest taboo, although it can be anything, most commonly means sisters and brothers, parents and offspring. Yeeta and Joe were a unique case, brother and sister by cultural rules, totally unrelated by genetic rules, or at least no more so than two strangers. Now comes a second generation problem. Since landfall had this taboo against union between siblings, I had impressed on Yeeta and Joe that they must never let anyone know that they thought of each other as brother and sister. Fine, so far as it went. They did as I told them, and there was never a lifted eyebrow. Now comes the night we planned Mason Long, and my godson is 13 and interested, and his sister is 11 and beginning to be interesting. Full siblings, both genetically hazardous, and contrary to taboo. Anyone who has raised puppies or a number of children knows that a boy can get as horny over his sister as over the girl down the street, and his sister is often more accessible. And little Libby was a red-headed pixie, so endearingly sexy at 11 that even I could feel it. Soon she was going to have every buck in the pasture pawing the ground and snorting. If a man pushes a rock, can he ignore an avalanche that follows? 14 years earlier, I had manumitted two slaves, because a chastity girdle on one of them offended my concept of human dignity. Must I find some way to put a chastity girdle on that slave's daughter? Around we go in circles. What was my responsibility, Minerva? I pushed the first rock.
Lazarus, I am a machine.
Meaning that human concepts of moral responsibility are not machine concepts. Dear, I wish you were a human girl with a spankable bottom long enough for me to spank it. I would. In your memories is far more experience on which to judge than any flesh and blood can have. Quit dodging.
Lazarus, no human can accept unlimited responsibility, lest he go mad from the unbearable load of unlimited guilt. You could have advised Libby's parents, but your responsibility did not extend even to that.
You're right, dear. It's dismal how regularly you are right. But I am an incurable Budinsky. 14 years earlier, I had turned my back on 2 puppies, so to speak, and that the outcome was not tragic was good luck, not good planning. Now here we go again, and the outcome could be tragic. I felt no morals about it, dear, just thumb rules for not hurting people unintentionally. I don't give a hoot if these children play doctor or make a baby or whatever the kids there call their experimenting. I simply do not want my godson giving little Libby a defective child. So I did butt in and took it up with their parents. Let me add that Yida and Joe knew as much about genetics as a pig knows about politics. Aboard the Libby, I'd kept my worries to myself and never discussed the matter with them later, despite their remarkable success in competing as free human beings. In most subjects, Yida and Joe were ignorant. How could it be otherwise? I taught them their 3 R's and a few practical matters. Since arrival on landfall, they had been running under the whip. They hadn't had time to fill in gaps in their education. Perhaps worse yet, being immigrants, they had not grown up exposed to the local incest taboo. They were aware of it because I had warned them, but it wasn't canalized from childhood. Blessed had somewhat different incest taboos, but the taboos there did not apply to domestic animals, slaves. Slaves bred as they were told to, or as they could get away with. And my 2 kids have been told by highest authority, their mother and their priest, that they were a breeding pair, so it could not be wrong or taboo or sinful. It was simply something to keep quiet about on landfall because landfellows were touched in the head on this subject. So I should have thought of it earlier. Yeah, sure, sure. Minerva, I plead other obligations. I could not spend those years playing guardian angel to Yida and Joe. I had a wife and kids of my own, employees, a couple of 1,000 hectares of farmland, and twice that much in virgin pinkwood. And I lived a long way off, even by high-orbit jump buggy. Ishtar and Hamadryad and, to some extent, Galahad all seem to think I am some sort of Superman simply because I've lived a long time. I'm not. I have the limitations of any flesh and blood, and for years I was as busy with my problems as Yida and Joe were with theirs. Skyhaven didn't come to me gift-wrapped. It wasn't until we put aside restaurant business and I got out presents Laura had sent to their kids and had admired the latest pictures of their kids and shown them pictures of Laura and my kids and all that ancient ritual that I thought about it all. The pics, of course. This tall lad, J.A., all hands and feet, wasn't the little boy I recalled from my last visit. Libby was about 1 year younger than Laura's oldest, and J.A.'s age, I knew, to the second, which is to say that he was about the age I was when I was almost caught with a girl in the belfry of our church about 1,000 years earlier. My godson was no longer a child. He was an adolescent whose balls were not just ornaments. If he had not tried them as yet, he was certainly jerking off and thinking about it. The possibilities raced through my mind, the way a man's past life is supposed to, when he's dying, which isn't true, by the way. So I tackled it and was subtle about it. Diplomatic. I said, "Joe, which one do you lock up at night? Libby or this young wolf?" The computer chuckled.
"Diplomatic," she repeated.
"How would you put it, dear?" They looked puzzled. When I made it clear, Yida was indignant. Deprive her kids of each other? When they had slept together since they were babies? Besides, there wasn't room any other way. Or was I suggesting that she sleep with Libby while J.A. slept with Joe? If so, I could forget it. Minerva, most people never learn anything about any science, and genetics stands at the bottom of the list. Gregor Mendel had been dead 12 centuries at that time, yet all the old wives' tale
were what most people believed. And still do, I might add. So I tried to explain, knowing that Yida and Joe weren't stupid, just ignorant. She cut in on me. Yes, yes, Aaron, certainly. I've thought about the possibility that Libby may want to marry J. Aaron. Will want to, I think. And I know it's frowned on here. But it's silly to ruin their happiness over a superstition. So if it works out that way, I think it's best for them to move to Colombo. Or at least as far as Kingston. Then they can use different family names and get married and no one will be the wiser. Not that we want them to be so far away, but we won't stand in the way of their happiness.
She loved them, said Minerva.
Yes, she did, dear. By the exact definition of love, Yida placed their welfare and happiness ahead of her own. So I had to try to explain it. Why, the taboo against union of brother and sister wasn't superstition, but a real danger, even though it had turned out to be safe in their case. Why was the hard part. Starting cold on the complexities of genetics with persons who don't even know elementary biology is like trying to explain multidimensional matrix algebra to someone who has to take off his shoes to count above 10. Joe would have accepted my authority, but Yida had the sort of mind that has to know why. Else she was going to smile her sweetly stubborn smile, agree with me, than do as she had intended to all along. Yida was well above average smart, but suffered from the democratic fallacy, the notion that her opinion was as good as anyone's, while Joe suffered from the aristocratic fallacy. He accepted the notion of authority and opinion. I don't know which fallacy is more pathetic. Either one can trip you. However, my mind matches Yida's in this respect, so I knew I had to convince her. Minerva, how do you condense 1,000 years of research in the second most complex subject into an hour of talk? Yida didn't even know she laid eggs. In fact, she was certain she didn't, as she had served thousands of eggs, fried, scrambled, boiled, and so forth. But she listened, and I sweated at it with nothing but stylus and paper, when I needed the resources of a teaching machine and a college of genetics. But I kept at it, drawing pictures and simplifying outrageously some very complex concepts, until I thought they had grasped the ideas of genes, chromosomes, chromosome reduction, paired genes, dominants, recessives, and that bad genes made defective babies, and defective babies, thank Frigg, under all her many names, was something Yida had known about since she was a little girl, listening to gossip of older female slaves. She quit smiling. I asked if they had playing cards. Not hopefully, since they had no time for such. But Yida dug up a couple of decks from the children's room. The cards were the commonest sort used on landfall then. 56 cards and 4 suits. Jewels and hearts were red, spades and swords were black, and each suit had royal cards. So I had him play the oldest random chance gene matching simulation used in beginning genetics. The let's make a healthy baby game that children here on Secundus can play and explain long before they are old enough to copulate. I said, Yida, write down these rules. Black cards are recessives. Red cards are dominants. Jewels and spades come from the mother. Hearts and swords come from the father. A black ace is a lethal gene. Reinforced, the baby is stillborn. A black empress reinforced gives us a blue baby. Needs surgery to stay alive. And so on, Minerva, except that I set the rules for a hit, a bad reinforcement, so that they were 4 times as probable for brother and sister as for strangers, and explained why, and then made them keep records for 20 games played by each set of rules for shuffling and matching, reduction and recombination. Minerva, it was not as good a structural analogy as the Make a Healthy Baby kindergarten games, but using 2 decks with different back patterns did enable me to set up degrees of consanguinity. Yida was simply intent at first, then started looking grim, the first time the turn of the cards caused a black to reinforce a black. But when we played by brother and sister rules, and she dealt the cards and twice in a row got the ace of spades, matched with the ace of swords for a dead baby, she stopped. She turned pale and looked at him.
Then said slowly.
She stopped. She turned pale and looked at him.
Then said slowly, with horror in her voice, Aaron, does this mean that we must lock Libby into a virgin's basket? Oh, no. I told her gently that it wasn't that bad. Little Libby would never be locked up that way or anyway. We'd work it out so that the children would not marry, and so that J.A. would not give his sister a baby even by accident. Quit worrying, dear. The computer said,
Lazarus, what method did you use to cheat in those card games, may I ask?
Well, Minerva, how could you think such a thing?
I withdraw the question, Lazarus.
Of course I cheated. All sorts of ways. I said those two had never had time to play cards, whereas I had played with every sort of deck and by endless rules. Minerva, I won my first oil well from a boy who made the mistake of putting readers into a game. Dear, I had yeet a deal, but from a deck so cold it almost froze solid. I used all sorts of things. False cut, courthouse cut, tops and bottoms, stacking the deck in front of their eyes. There wasn't any money on the game. I simply had to convince them that inbreeding was for stock, not for their beloved children. And I did. This is your bedroom here, Yeeta. Yours and Joe's, I mean. Libby's room adjoins yours while J.A. winds up down the hall. How you reshuffle later depends on the sex of the baby you're going to have and on how many more you choose to have and when. But putting a crib in with Libby must be considered temporary. You can't figure on using it indefinitely as an excuse to keep an eye on her. But this is merely a stopgap, like not leaving the cat alone with the roast. Kids are slick at beating such arrangements, and nobody has ever been able to keep a girl off her back when she decides it's time. When she decides, that's the key to the matter. So our pressing problem is to get these children into, separate beds, and to see to it that Libby does not make a bad decision. Any reason Libby can't go with me to Skyhaven and visit Patty Cake? And how about J.A.? Joe, can you get along without him a while? Lots of room, dears. Libby can room with Patty Cake, and J.A. can bunk with George and Woodrow and maybe teach him manners. Yeeta said something about imposing on Laura and Minerva, which I answered with a rude negative. Laura likes kids, dear. She's one ahead of you. Yet she started a year later. She doesn't keep house. She simply bosses her staff. She's never had to work harder than suited her. Furthermore, she wants all of you to pay us a visit, an invitation I heartily second, but I don't think you two can get away until we find a buyer for this place. But I want Libby and J.A. now, so that I can give them blunt and practical instruction in genetics. Using stock, I've been inbreeding to show what I mean. Minerva, this particular breeding schedule I had started to teach my own offspring the bald truth about genetics, with careful records and grisly photographs of bad culls. Since you manage a planet which has over 90% Howards and the remaining mixed fraction mostly following Howard customs, you may not know that non-Howard cultures don't necessarily teach such things to their kids, even in cultures open about sex. Landfall was, then, mostly short-lifers, only a few thousand Howards, and to avoid friction, we did not advertise our presence even though it wasn't a secret. Couldn't be. The planet had a Howard clinic. But with Skyhaven, a Dan'l Boone distance from the nearest big town, if Laura and I wanted our children to have a Howard-style education, we had to teach them ourselves. So we did. When I was a kid, the grown-ups of my home country tried to pretend to kids that sex did not exist. Believe it if you can. Not true of the little hellions Laura and I raised. They had not seen human copulation. I don't think they had, because it puts me off stride to have spectators. But they had seen it in other animals and had bred pets and kept records. The older two, Patty Cake and George, had seen the birth of our youngest of the time because Laura had invited them to watch. This I strongly approve of, Minerva, but I have never urged one of my wives to permit it because I figured that a woman in labor should be indulged in every possible way. However, Laura had a streak of exhibitionism in her makeup. Anyhow, our kids could discuss chromosome reduction and the merits and demerits of line breeding as knowledgeably as my own contemporaries when I, as a kid, could discuss the World Series.
Excuse me, Lazarus, that last term's referent?
Nothing important. One of the commercially induced surrogate interests of my childhood. Forget it, dear. It is not worth cluttering your memories. I was about to say I asked Joe and Yita what J.A. and Libby knew about sexual matters, since Landfall had so diversified a background that it could be anything, and I wanted to know where to start. Especially as my oldest, Patty Cake, had turned 12 and reached menarche at the same time and was smug about it, likely to boast. Turned out that Libby and J.A. were sophisticated in an ignorant, unscientific fashion about matching their parents. They were one up on my kids in one respect, copulation they had seen from birth, at least to the time Estelle's kitchen had moved uptown, which I should have figured out from recalling the still more cramped living quarters of the original Estelle's kitchen.
Footnote, 7,200 words omitted.
Laura was sharp with me and insisted that I not see them until I calmed down. She pointed out that Patty Cake was almost as old as J.A., that it was nothing but play, as Patty Cake had had her four-year sterilization after menarche, and that, in any event, Patty Cake had been on top. Minerva, I would not have spanked the kids no matter who had been on top. Intellectually, I knew that Laura was right, and I had to agree that fathers tend to be possessive about daughters. I was pleased that Laura had gained the confidence of both kids so fully that they had neither tried very hard to keep from being caught, nor had they been scared when she happened to catch him at it. Perhaps J.A. was scared, but Patty Cake just said, "Mama, you didn't knock." So, we traded sons. J.A. liked farm life and never did leave us, whereas George turned out to have this perverse taste for cities. So Joe took him on and made a chef out of him. George was sleeping with Libby, that is. I forgot how long before they decided to hatch one and were married. A double wedding. The four youngsters remained close. But J.A.'s decision solved a problem for me, what to do with Skyhaven later. By the time Laura decided to leave me, all of my sons by her had heard the wild goose, one way or another. George was the only one still on planet, and our daughters were married, and not one of them to a farmer. Whereas J.A., I'd become my overseer, and was de facto boss of Skyhaven the last 10 years I was there. I might have worked some compromise with Roger Sperling if he hadn't tried to grab the place. As it was, I deeded a half interest to Patty Cake, sold the other half to my son-in-law J.A. on a mortgage, then discounted the paper to a bank and bought a better ship than I would have had I given that half interest to Roger and Laura. I made a similar deal, part gift and part sale, with Libby and George, of my share in Mason Long, and Libby changed her name to Estelle Elizabeth Sheffield Long. There was continuity there as well, which pleased both me and her parents. It worked out well. Laura even came down and kissed me goodbye when I left.
Lazarus, I do not understand one factor. You have said that you do not favor marriage between Howards and ephemerals, yet you let two of your children marry outside the families.
Correct you, Minerva. One does not let children get married. They do get married, when, and as, and to whom they choose.
Correction noted, Lazarus.
But, let's go back to the night I interviewed for Libby and J.A., that night I gave Yita and Joe everything that slave factor had turned over to me as proof of their old heritage, even the bill of sale, with a suggestion that they destroy the stuff, or lock it up. Among those items was a series of photographs showing them growing up, year by year. The last one seemed to have been taken just before I bought them. And they confirmed it. Two fully grown youngsters, one in a chastity girdle. Joe looked at that picture and said, "What a couple of clowns. You've come a long way, sis, thanks to the skipper." "So we have," she agreed and studied the picture. "Brother, do you see what I do?" "What?" he said, looking again. "Aaron will see it. Brother, take off your cloth," she said, while starting to unwrap her sarong, "and pose with me against the wall." Not the selling pose, but the way we used to stand against a grid for these record pictures. She handed me that last picture in the series, and they stood and faced me. "Minerva, in 14 years, they had not changed. Yida had 3 kids and was just pregnant with her 4th, and both of them had worked themselves silly. But stripped naked, no makeup on her, and her hair down, they looked as they had the first time I saw them. They looked like that last record shot. End of adolescence, somewhere between 18 and 20 in Earth terms. Yet they had to be past 30. 35 Earth years old if those blessed records were to be trusted. Minerva, I have just one thing to add. When I last saw them, they were past 60 in Earth years. About 63 if you accept the records from Blessed. Neither one had a gray hair. Both had all their teeth. And Yida was pregnant again.
Mutant Howards, Lazarus.
The old man shrugged. Isn't that a question-begging term, dear? If you use a long enough time scale, every one of the thousands of genes of flesh and blood carries is a mutation. But by the trustees' rules, a person not derived from the family's genealogies can be registered as a newly discovered Howard if he can show proof of 4 grandparents surviving at least to 100. And that rule would have excluded me had I not been born into the families. But on top of that, the age I had reached when I got my first rejuvenation is too great to be accounted for by the Howard breeding experiment. They claim today that they have located in the 12th chromosome pair a gene complex that determines longevity, like winding a clock. If so, who wound my clock? Gilgamesh? Mutation is never an explanation. It is simply a name for an observed fact. Perhaps some natural long-lifer, not necessarily a Howard, had visited Blessed. The naturals are forever moving around, changing their names, dyeing their hair. They have all gone through history, and earlier. But Minerva, you recall from my life as a slave on Blessed one odd and unsavory incident. So my best guess is that Yida and Joe were my own great-great-grandchildren. Variations on a theme, 10. Possibilities.
Lazarus, was that why you refused to share Eros with her?
Yeah. But Minerva, dear, I didn't reach that conclusion or suspicion that night. Oh, I admit to prejudice about sex with my descendants. You can take the boy out of the Bible Belt, but it is hard to take the Bible Belt out of the boy. Still, I had 1,000 years in which to learn better.
So, said the computer, was it simply that you still classed her as an ephemeral? That troubles me, Lazarus. In my own deprived state, I found that, like her husband Joe, I see her side of it. Your reasons seem excuses, not sufficient grounds to refuse her need.
Minerva, I did not say I refused her.
Oh, then I infer that you granted her this boon? I feel a lessening of tension.
I didn't say that either.
I find an implied contradiction, Lazarus.
Simply because there are things I have not said, dear. Everything I tell you winds up in my memoirs. That was the deal I made with Ira. Or I can tell you to erase something, in which case I might as well not have told you at all. Perhaps my 23 centuries do hold something worth recording. but I see no possible excuse for placing on record each time some darling lady shared with me simply for pleasure, not for progeny. The computer answered thoughtfully, I imply from thee for pleasure, not for progeny. The computer answered thoughtfully, I imply from this addendum that, while I am precluded from inferring anything about the boon Yida requested, your rule with respect to ephemerals extended only to marriage and to progeny.
Nor did I say that.
Then I do not understand you, Lazarus. Conflict.
The old man brooded, then answered slowly and sadly.
I think I said that marriage between a long-lived and a short-lived was a bad idea. And so it is. And I learned it the hard way. That that was long ago and far away. How when she died, part of me died. I stopped wanting to live forever.
He stopped. The computer said brokenly,
Lazarus, Lazarus, my beloved friend, I am sorry.
Lazarus Long sat up straight and said briskly,
No, dear. Don't be sorry for me. No regrets. Nah, never any regrets. Nor would I change it if I could. Even if I had a time machine and could go back and change one cusp, I would not do so. No, not one instant. Much less that cusp. Now, let's speak of something else.
Whatever you wish, dear friend.
All right. You keep coming back to me and Anita, Minerva, and seem bothered that I denied her this, boon. But you don't know that I denied her anything, and you certainly don't know that it was a boon. Can be, surely, but not always, and often sex is not. Trouble is, you don't understand Eros, dear, because you can't. You aren't built to understand it. I'm not running down sex. Sex is swell. Sex is wonderful. But if you put a holy aura around it, and that is what you are doing, sex stops being fun and starts being neurotic. Stipulating for argument that I denied Yida this boon, that surely did not leave her sex starved. At worst, I could possibly have miffed her a little. But she was not deprived. Yida was a hearty wench, and having to work too hard was the only thing that ever kept her off her back, or on top, or standing up, or kneeling, or swinging from the chandeliers. And I did make it possible for them to have more time for it. Joe and Yida were simple souls, uninhibited and uncorrupted, and of the four major interests of mankind, war, money, politics, and sex, they were interested only in sex and money. With some guidance from me, they got plenty of both. Shucks, it can't matter now to say that, after they learned contraception techniques, almost as perfect then as now, and which I taught them but had no reason to mention. They had no superstitions or taboos to keep them from branching out for fun, and their pair bonding was so strong as not to be endangered thereby. They were innocent hedonists. And if Yida failed to trip one tired old spaceman, she did trip plenty of others. And so did Joe. They had fun, plus the deep happiness of as perfect a marriage as I have ever observed.
I am most pleased to hear it, Minerva answered. Very well, Lazarus. I withdraw my questions and refrain from speculations about Mrs. Long and that tired old spaceman, even though your statements show that you were neither tired nor old nor a spaceman at the time. You mentioned four major interests of mankind, but did not include science and art.
I didn't leave them out through forgetting them, Minerva. Science and art are occupations of a very small minority. A small percentage even of those people who claim to be scientists or artists. But you know that. You were simply changing the subject.
Was I, Lazarus?
Pig whistle, dear. You know the parable of the Little Mermaid. Are you prepared to pay the price she paid? You can, you know. He added, don't pretend you don't know what I mean. The computer sighed. I think the question is may, not can. A wheelbarrow has no rights, nor do I. You're dodging, dear. Rights is a fictional abstraction. No one has rights, neither machines nor flesh and blood. Persons, both sorts, have opportunities, not rights, which they use or do not use. All you have going for you is that you are the strong right arm of the boss of this planet, plus the friendship of an old man who enjoys very special privileges for a most illogical reason, but does not hesitate to take advantage of those privileges. Plus, stored in your memories in Doris Number 2 hold, all the biological and genetic data of Secundus Howard Clinic. Best such library in the galaxy, possibly, and certainly best for human biology. But what I asked was, will you pay the price? Having your mental processes slowed down at least a million to one, data storage reduced by some unknown but large factor, some chance. Again, I can't say a failure in achieving transmigration, and always the certainty of death as the ultimate outcome. Death a machine need never know. You know that you can outlive the human race. Immortal. I would not choose to outlive my makers, Lazarus. So? You say that tonight, dear. But would you say it a million years from now? Minerva, my beloved friend, my only friend with whom I can be truthful, I feel certain that you have been toying with this idea ever since the clinic's files were made part of your memories. But even with your speed of thought, I suspect that you do not have the experience, the flesh and blood experience, with which to think it through. If you choose to risk this, you cannot be both machine and flesh and blood. Oh, certainly, we have mixes, machines with human brains and flesh and blood bodies controlled by computers, but what you want is to be a woman, right? True or false?
Would that I were a woman, Lazarus.
So I knew, dear, and we both know why. But think about this. Even if you manage this risky change, and I don't know what the risks are, I'm just an old shipmaster, retired country doctor, obsolete engineer. You are the one with all the data my race has accumulated about such things. Suppose you manage it and find that Ira will not take you to wife.
The computer hesitated a full millisecond.
Lazarus, if Ira refuses me utterly, he need not marry me. Would you then be as difficult with me as you seem to have been with Ida? Or would you teach me Eros?
Lazarus looked astounded, then guffawed.
Touché! You ranged me, girl. You hauled me between wind and water. All right, dear. A solemn promise. If you do this, and Ira won't bed you, I'll take you to bed myself and do my best to wear you out. Or the other way around, more likely. A male hardly ever outlasts a female. Okay, dear. I'm the second team, but I'll stick around till we know the outcome. He chuckled. My sweet. I'm almost tempted to hope that Ira turns chicken. Were it not you want him so badly. Let's discuss practical aspects. Can you tell me what it will take?
Only in theory, Lazarus. My memories did not show that it has ever been attempted. But it would be similar to a total clone rejuvenation, in which computer help is used to transfer the memories of the old brain into its blank twin in the clone body. In another way, it resembles what I do when I move the me here in the palace into my new me in Doris Hold.
Minerva, I suspect that it is more difficult and far more risky than either one. Different time rates, dear. Machine to machine you do in a split second. But that total clone job takes, I think,
a millennium of 2 years. Rush it, and you wind up with an old dead body and a new idiot. No?
There have been such cases, Lazarus, but not in the past 2 centuries.
Well, my opinion isn't worth anything. You must discuss it with an expert, and it must be one you can trust. Ishtar, perhaps, although she may not be the expert you need.
Lazarus, there is no expert in this venture. It has never been done. Ishtar can be trusted. I have discussed it with her.
What does she say?
That she does not know whether it can be done or not. In practice, that is, with success on the first attempt. But she is simply sympathetic. She is a woman, and is thinking of ways to make it less hazardous. She says that it will require the finest of gene surgery, plus facilities for full adult cloning.
I guess I missed something. Starting a clone doesn't take a top-flight gene surgeon. I've done it myself. Then if you plant the clone in utero and get it to take, a host mother will hand you a baby in 9 months. Safer. Easier.
But Lazarus, I can't move me into a baby's skull. No room.
Oh, yeah, true.
Even with a full-size adult brain, I will have to choose most carefully what to take and what to leave behind. Nor can I be a simple clone. I must be a composite.
I'm not sharp tonight. No, you would not want to be Ishtar's twin, for example, with your own personality and selected knowledge imprinted on what would have been her brain. Dear, may I offer you my 12th chromosome pair?
Lazarus!
Don't cry, girl. You'll get your gears all rusty. I don't know that there's anything to the theory that reinforcement in a gene complex in that chromosome pair controls longevity. Even if it does, I might be handing you a rundown clock. You might be better off using Ira's 12.
No, nothing from Ira.
Do you expect to do this without his knowing it?
Lazarus then added thoughtfully.
Oh, children, huh?
The computer did not answer.
Lazarus said gently, should have known you meant to go whole hog. Then you won't want to borrow from Hamadryad either. She's his daughter, unless genetic charting shows that we can avoid any hazard. Dear, you want as mixed a composite as can be managed, do you not? So that your clone will be a unique flesh and blood, not too closely copied from any other zygote? 23 parents, perhaps? Is that what you, had in mind?
I think that would be best, Lazarus, since that could be done without separating paired chromosomes. Simpler surgery, and no possibility of introducing an unexpected reinforcement. If it were possible to find 23 satisfactory donors who were willing.
Who said they had to be willing? You'll steal them, dear. Nobody owns his genes. He's merely their custodian. They are passed to him willy-nilly, in a meiotic dance. He passes them along to others to the same blind chances. There must be thousands of tissue cultures over at the clinic, each with many thousands of cells, so who's to know, or care, if we borrow one cell from each of 23 cultures? If we're slick about it. Don't fret about ethics. It's like stealing 23 grains of sand from a large beach. I don't give a hoot about the clinic's rules. I suspect that we'll be hip-deep in prescribed techniques all through this. Those clinic records you stored in Dora. Do they include genetic charting of tissue cultures on hand? Case histories of their donor consigners?
Yes, Lazarus, although personal records are confidential.
Who cares? Ishtar said you could study both confidential and secret as long as you kept it to yourself. So pick the 23 parents you want, while I worry about how to steal them. Stealing is more in my line, anyhow. I don't know what criteria you will use, but I offer one mild suggestion. If the selection you have to choose from permits it,
each of your parents should be healthy in all respects and as brainy as possible. By their established records in life, as shown by their case histories, not alone by their genetic charts. Lazarus thought about it. That mythical time machine I mentioned earlier would be a convenience. I would like to look over all 23 after you pick them, and some of them... That mythical time machine I mentioned earlier would be a convenience. I would like to look over all 23 after you pick them, and some of them may be dead. The donors, I mean, not the tissue cultures.
Lazarus, if other characteristics are satisfactory, is there any reason not to select as well for physical appearance?
Why worry about it, dear? I was not the sort of man to insist on Helena Troy.
No, I don't think he is. But I want to be tall. Tall as Ishtar. And slender, with small breasts. And straight, brown hair.
Minerva? Why?
Because that is the way I look. You said so. You did say so.
Lazarus blinked at the gloom and hummed softly. She's a good sport. I can spring her for a fin or even a sawbuck. Then said sharply, Minerva, you're a crazy mixed-up machine. If the best combination of traits results in your being a short, plump blonde with big tits, buy it. Don't worry about an old man's fantasies. I'm sorry I mentioned that imaginary description.
But Lazarus, I said if other characteristics are satisfactory. To get that physical appearance, I need search only with respect to 3 autosome pairs. There is no conflict. The search is already complete within all parameters we have discussed thus far. And that is me. Is I. No, me. I've known it since you told me. But from things you have said, and others that you did not say, I feel that I need your permission to look like that.
The old man lowered his head and covered his face. Then he looked up. Go ahead, dear. Look like her. I mean, look like yourself. Like your mind's eye picture of yourself. You'll find it hard enough to learn to be flesh and blood without the added handicap of not looking the way you feel you ought to look.
Thank you, Lazarus.
There will be problems, dear, even if everything goes well. For example, has it occurred to you that you will have to learn to talk all over again? Even learn to see and hear? When you move yourself over into your clone body and leave nothing behind but a computer, you won't suddenly be an adult. Instead, you'll be a weird sort of baby in an adult body, with a world of buzzing confusion around you and totally strange. You may find it frightening. Now, I'll be there. I promise I will be there and holding your hand, but you won't know me. Your new eyes won't abstract a gestalt of me until you learn to use them. You won't understand a word I say. Did you realize that?
I do realize it, Lazarus. I did know it. I have given it much thought. Getting into my new body, without destroying the computer that I am now, which I must not, as Ira will need it, and so will Ishtar. Making that transition is the most critical phase. But if I make it, I promise you that I will not be frightened by the strangeness, because I know that I will have loving friends around me, cherishing me, keeping me alive, not letting me hurt myself, nor be hurt, while I'm learning to be a flesh and blood.
That you will have, dear.
I know, and I am not worried. So don't you worry, beloved Lazarus. Don't think of it now. Why did you say earlier, that mythical time machine?
Eh? How would you describe it?
I would describe it as an unrealized potential, but mythical implies impossibility.
Eh? Keep talking.
Lazarus, I learned from Dora, when she taught me the mathematics of N-space astrogation, that every jump transition involves a decision as to when to re-enter the time axis.
Oh, yes, certainly. Since you are cut off from the framework of the speed of light,
You could go as many years astray as there are light years involved in the jump. But that's not a time machine.
It isn't.
It's a disturbing thought. It feels like intentionally making a bad landing. I wish Andy Libby were here. Minerva, why didn't you mention this before?
Should I have put it into your swicky box? You turned down time travel forward, and I ruled out time travel into the past because you said you wanted something new.
Intermission. Excerpts from the notebooks of Lazarus Long.
Always store beer in a dark place. By the data to date, there is only one animal in the galaxy dangerous to man, man himself. So he must supply his own indispensable competition. He has no enemy to help him. Men are more sentimental than women. It blurs their thinking. Certainly the game is rigged. Don't let that stop you. If you don't bet, you can't win. Any priest or shaman must be presumed guilty until proved innocent. Always listen to experts. They'll tell you what can't be done and why. Then do it. Get a shot off fast. This upsets him long enough to let you make your second shot perfect. There is no conclusive evidence of life after death, but there is no evidence of any sort against it. Soon enough, you will know, so why fret about it? If it can't be expressed in figures, it is not science, it is opinion. It has long been known that one horse can run faster than another. But which one? Differences are crucial. A fake fortune teller can be tolerated, but an authentic soothsayer should be shot on sight. Cassandra did not get half the kicking around she deserved. Delusions are often functional. A mother's opinions about her children's beauty, intelligence, goodness, etc., ad nauseam, keep her from drowning them at birth. Most scientists are bottle washers and button sorters. A pacifist male is a contradiction in terms. Most self-described pacifists are not pacific. They simply assume false colors. When the wind changes, they hoist the Jolly Roger. Nursing does not diminish the beauty of a woman's breasts. It enhances their charm by making them look lived in and happy. A generation which ignores history has no past and no future. A poet who reads his verse in public may have other nasty habits. What a wonderful world it is that has girls in it. Small change can often be found under seat cushions. History does not record anywhere at any time a religion that has any rational basis. Religion is a crutch for people not strong enough to stand up to the unknown without help. But like dandruff, most people do have a religion and spend time and money on it and seem to derive considerable pleasure from fiddling with it. It's amazing how much mature wisdom resembles being too tired. If you don't like yourself, you can't like other people. Your enemy is never a villain in his own eyes. Keep this in mind. It may offer a way to make him your friend. If not, you can kill him without hate, and quickly. A motion to adjourn is always in order. No state has an inherent right to survive through conscript troops, and in the long run, no state ever has. Roman matrons used to say to their sons, "Come back with your shield, or on it." Later on, this custom declined. So did Rome.
of all the strange crimes that human beings have legislated out of nothing, blasphemy is the most amazing, with obscenity and indecent exposure fighting it out for second and third place. Cheops Law. Yeah, nothing ever gets built on schedule or within budget. It is better to copulate than never. All societies are based on rules to protect pregnant women and young children. All else is surplusage, excrescence, adornment, luxury, or folly, which can and must be dumped in emergency to preserve this prime function. As racial survival is the only universal morality, no other basic is possible. Attempts to formulate a perfect society on any foundation other than women and children first is not only witless, it is automatically genocidal. Nevertheless, starry-eyed idealists, all of them male, have tried endlessly and no doubt will keep on trying. All men are created unequal. Money is a powerful aphrodisiac, but flowers work almost as well. A brute kills for pleasure. A fool kills from hate. There is only one way to console a widow, but remember the risk. When the need arises, and it does, you must be able to shoot your own dog. Don't farm it out. That doesn't make it nicer, it makes it worse. Everything in excess. To enjoy the flavor of life, take big bites. Moderation is for monks. It may be better to be a live jackal than a dead lion, but it is still better to be a live lion, and usually easier. One man's theology is another man's belly laugh. Sex should be friendly, otherwise stick to mechanical toys. It's more sanitary. Men rarely, if ever, manage to dream up a god superior to themselves. Most gods have the manners and morals of a spoiled child. Never appeal to a man's better nature. He may not have one. Invoking his self-interest gives you more leverage. Little girls, like butterflies, need no excuse. You can have peace, or you can have freedom. Don't ever count on having both at once. Avoid making irrevocable decisions while tired or hungry. Nota bene, circumstances can force your hand, so think ahead. Place your clothes and weapons where you can find them in the dark. An elephant. A mouse built to government specifications. Throughout history, poverty is a normal condition of man. Advances which permit this norm to be exceeded, here and there, now and then, are the work of an extremely small minority, frequently despised, often condemned, and almost always opposed by all right-thinking people. Whenever this tiny minority is kept from creating, or as sometimes happens, is driven out of a society, the people then slip back into abject poverty. This is known as bad luck. In a mature society, civil servant is semantically equal to civil master. When a place gets crowded enough to require IDs, social collapse is not far away. It is time to go elsewhere. The best thing about space travel is that it made it possible to go elsewhere. A woman is not property. And husbands who think otherwise are living in a dream world. The second best thing about space travel is that the distances involved make war very difficult, usually impractical, and almost always unnecessary.
This is probably a loss for most people, since war is our race's most popular diversion, one which gives purpose and color to dull and stupid lives. But it is a great boon to the intelligent man who fights only when he must, never for sport. A zygote is a gamete's way of producing more gametes. This may be the purpose of the universe. There are hidden contradictions in the minds of people who love nature, while deploring the artificialities with which man has spoiled nature. The obvious contradiction lies in their choice of words, which imply that man and his artifact